coming to you from the IL Podcast Studio in the Baltimore, Maryland, worldwide headquarters of Inside Lacrosse. It's the D-Fly and Dixie Show, featuring Inside Lacrosse and Big Ten Network analyst Mark Dixon. I'm your host, Dan Flynn. Dix, let's get it. It's great to see you, Dix.
Where have you been?
I've been away.
Where have you been? You're not tan and you looked relaxed, but you don't look tan.
Well, I took a cruise to the Bahamas.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the weather hasn't been so great on the East Coast lately.
Yeah.
And it affects the waters down even, you know, off the coast of Florida. So, yeah, it was cold and very windy. On the islands, it was okay. A high temperature of, like, close to 80 on one day.
Okay.
And kind of, like, low 70s the other days. Definitely beach weather, but only, like, a few days of that. And you have to get there, so there's, like, a whole day where it's just cold.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get down by the coast of Florida, and it's a little bit better. And then you got to go back. So, you know, it's a week long trip, but
right,
it was not beach weather every day, take your shirt off.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
Yeah, no, but we knew that going into it.
Right.
And the weather definitely affected even in the Bahamas. You know, like there's a dock at one of the places we went. It was supposed to take it out to an island 2 days before. The storm that had come through and the wind and the high waves wiped out the dock. So there wasn't even like the shuttle out to it.
Mm-hmm.
And the water, which on all the pictures and all the videos, is like
it was always very tranquil.
Yeah,
yes.
And still not the case. Very choppy.
Sea was angry
waters.
That day, my friend.
Yes. Like an old man.
Trying to send back soup.
Like my father-in-law. Trying to send soup back at the Mermaid's Grill.
So your father-in-law was on the trip?
Yeah.
Okay.
My wife's parents went and her brother. Again, this was a redo from a cruise we went
on. You mentioned that a couple weeks ago that it had been canceled or postponed a couple years ago.
We still went.
Rescheduled.
It just wasn't much fun. And her family went, which was great. It was really nice to spend a lot of time with them, especially their grandkids got to spend time with grandma, grandpa, and Uncle Keith. That was really cool.
Okay.
And I really like hanging out with them, too. They're super nice to me. And I don't get to spend a whole lot of time with her brother.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really fun to catch up with him and do that thing.
How was the boat?
The ship?
Yeah. Was Vicky Steubing on there? Or
no,
Isaac, the bartender?
Someone named Lee.
Lee?
And it's a guy. Uh-huh. And he's from Australia. And he's the cruise director.
Okay.
And he's super annoying. He comes on. There's like this ding, 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 like these chimes. And you just hear his voice telling you stuff.
And he's like, hello, everyone.
You only hear from the captain.
Good eye.
You only hear from the captain like one time.
Really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
He's an Italian guy.
It's like a flight when you only have to hear from the pilot to tell you to put your seatbelt back on or let you know what you're cruising at. That's always a good day. So,
but there were some interesting things that happened. Like we had to return to the port one night because one of the passengers got sick and had to be evacuated off the ship immediately.
Wow.
But it wasn't like a sick. I think it was a heart attack or something like that.
Ooh.
One thing I learned going on this cruise. We both got into the wrong profession, Dex. You know what we should have done?
What?
Tattoo artist.
No kidding.
Tattoos everywhere.
Well, yeah.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
On every person.
Right.
It was crazy.
Yeah. You tend to, I've been to Mexico in a while, but like when you go to the all-inclusive places at Mexico, you tend to have a crowd that's a little rough sometimes. Look, I have a tattoo. My wife has a tattoo.
No. You're not covered in them.
Well, yeah, and that's It's people like their drink when they go on these types of cruises and trips and things of that nature.
There was
anything get out of hand? Any rowdiness?
No, not like that cruise from like Australia where a whole family of 23 people had to be taken off because they got in a fight with all of the security.
Oh, really?
And other passengers. Yeah, this like rowdy Australian family had to be removed.
Sounds like a good time.
None of that kind of stuff. There was something like Josh who works here. So Josh Davey who works here, his future sister-in-law.
Oh yeah, I know Josh.
His future sister-in-law Ilana was on this cruise, and I only ran into her like two or three times.
Why was she on the cruise?
She goes to Penn State, and
right?
It's their spring break. So
oh,
there was
cool.
A good number of spring breakers from
gotcha.
Like Pennsylvania schools.
I was like, it's getting way too familiar. What next? You're going to say you turned the corner and Terry Foy was drinking a Mai Tai?
No, my point is, like, there's certain people that you only see a couple of times on this 2,500-passenger ship.
Yeah.
And then there's other people you see all the time.
Okay.
And I love...
Omnipotent person.
Yeah, there were a couple of older guys who were both kind of overweight and bald, and they were brothers. They're probably about 60 years old.
Yeah.
Like, they had some, like, grown kids who were with them, I guess. Never saw them with any women, so maybe they're divorced or the moms didn't come. But all they did, every time I saw them, they had their shirts off, they were near the pool, and they were just crushing Bud Lights. Buckets of Bud Lights all the time, every day.
Guns out with a bucket of suds.
So there were there were people like that that you just saw constantly.
Now, were they the same two guys? Or they just,
they're the exact same two guys.
There's other people that just look like those guys because you had a lot of...
These guys.
They're unmistakable.
Yeah, they look almost like twins, but you know, they were a little... You could tell they were brothers.
The Bash Brothers.
They just... The Bud Light Bros is what I call them.
The BRBs?
Dilly. BLBs. They were crushing Bud Light aluminum can bottles all day, every day.
That's great. Good for them.
Yeah.
So,
good time. But it's the first time we've been together in 3 weeks. You were away.
I was away on business. You were on vacay.
I enjoyed listening to the podcast last week. I had a chance. When you go on one of those things, like, there's no Wi-Fi anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we got off the ship at one point. We went to some resort, and they had Wi-Fi and it just happened to be on Wednesday. Say, we'll download the podcast and listen to you.
You could not wait. You're like, did it get on? Did it get on? How much did Kinnear screw up?
I was a little nervous that it wouldn't happen.
Offend the sponsors.
But, you know, Matt's very reliable. I'd like to thank him for filling in.
Did a great job.
Not only for me last week, but for you the week before. We were able to play your call-ins, which is really nice, and get your thoughts on the games.
Mm-hmm.
But let's get into this week, man. There was a lot of big games.
Yep.
You called probably the biggest game of the season, number one versus number two, which we'll talk about in a second. But 11 of the top 20 teams lost in this past week, which would, I guess, would be like week four of the five of the season.
Yep.
So crazy outcomes in this one, and kind of shows you a little bit of the parity of lacrosse or this
time
of year.
Don't use that word. It's not parity. It's just the teams have closed the gap. Again, so I think it was Matt and I talked about parity. Maybe he brought up parity last week, but parity to me would be a MAC team winning an NCAA tournament game, a team like Bucknell, a Patriot League team other than Loyola making it to the championship weekend, things of that nature. The America East, and it could happen with Albany, obviously. America East getting
the number one team
weekend.
In the country is an America East.
Yeah,
team.
So I don't really consider it to be parity. I definitely consider it to be an upgrade in quality.
Well, I mean, would you say Vermont and Robert Morris being in the
narrowed the gap. They've put resources into their program. They're getting good student athletes, and they're getting results. Look, we'll find out real quick about Vermont this coming weekend. They play Albany at Albany. You know, Robert Morris has had some really nice wins. They're up and coming. I mean, they're up and coming programs. They got good coaches and again, schools that support the sport and everything like that. But the parity word, I think, just gets thrown around a little too much.
Okay.
Didn't mean to yell at you.
Fair
enough.
The
first couple
minutes
fine. Back, you know.
No.
Let's talk about the cruise again.
So let's talk about this game, Dix. You called this one with Joe B. down in College Park.
No, Joe B. was not there. It was Pete Medhurst.
It was Pete Medhurst.
Yeah, Joe B. was had a Caps game out in the West Coast. He was very happy to call the Caps game, obviously, but he was definitely disappointed that he couldn't call the game. But Pete stepped in and did a great job.
So, number one, Albany goes down to College Park and beats the Terps 11-10. They make a comeback in the game. You know, I wasn't able to watch this game live. I was still away. I come back and I read about it on InsideLacrosse.com, and I look at the box score. The fact that Albany won in College Park without Tahoka scoring a goal was shocking to me.
Here's the other thing I learned, and thank you to Scott Marr. Tahoka.
Tahoka.
It's pronounced Tahoka. Spelled Tahoka, but pronounced Tahoka.
Nanticoke.
Yeah.
I knew we had been saying this wrong.
Yeah, I have been.
I've heard that other pronunciation.
Yep.
So Nanticoke doesn't score any goals. He has one assist. Quite limited. He still got off eight shots, but they come out with a victory in College Park. Tell me about the game. What are your takeaways from it?
It was a game that didn't feel like it was March 10th. I pulled into the parking lot around 9:45. It was a noon face-off, and you already had the Maryland flag and the Big Ten flag flying high, and then the Albany flag and the America East flag flying just as high. So right off the bat, you had a vibe, you had a feel. About 7,500 fans at the game. It was brisk, it was cold, but it had even in the pregame, when you looked across, like, you know, 6,000 of those fans were probably in their seats for the opening face-off.
That's awesome.
So it just had a big time feel. As far as the game itself, I thought Maryland was playing Maryland lacrosse for three quarters. They were controlling possessions. Justin Shockey was doing a great job at the faceoff. I thought Maryland was shooting the ball really, really well. John Tillman at halftime was really upset with his defense. I'm sorry, with his offense. He thought they were being a little careless, and that came back to bite them in the fourth quarter. I think they only took four shots in the fourth quarter. A couple were very ill-advised, a little hasty, but I thought J.D. Colarusso made the saves that he needed to make. The main takeaway from this, and I kept saying it all game long, if Albany can string together a goal or two and Erland can get on a roll with the faceoffs, they can come back and win this game, and that's exactly what happened. Erland was incredible in the fourth quarter. Did not lose a faceoff. He went
six of six
in the fourth. Albany only got goals from four guys. Three guys. Kyle McClancy, Zach Patterson, and Connor Fields.
But sometimes that's all you need.
Sometimes it is all you need.
When you thought that Nanacoke would be a reliable goal scorer for them, or Ray would score goals.
Yeah.
So they got them from different people. So
they did.
When you talk about a depth of scoring, sometimes three guys can carry you in a game.
Yeah.
But you have additional players. It's not one or two guys that has to score for you.
I thought Albany played a little slow in the first half, and that had to do with them not controlling possessions. But when they did get the ball, I just thought it was a little too much one-on-one. Connor Fields going against Curtis Corley, and you had five guys standing around watching him, where I thought they could have success was attacking the Maryland short sticks. And once Kyle McClancy did that, he scored three goals, all three on inverts, all three great shots and great plays. Zach Patterson started going to the goal hard against the shorty instead of being a bystander in the offense. He scored, I believe, twice in the fourth period. But Connor Fields at the end, it was just one-on-one. I thought Curtis Corley did a great job. He got him to the top of the box, and then you could just see the two purple jerseys clear out. That took Maryland out of their slide packages. That took them out of their that compromised the integrity of the Maryland defensive scheme. Connor Fields beat him and shot and scored, and Albany wins the game. It was a terrific game, but as both coaches said during the week last week, as big as this game was, as big as the W is for Albany, it's a game early March, and there's so much lacrosse left to be played. But if you're Albany, you got to feel really, really good. You know, they lost by a goal in the regular season to the Terps last year. Then they got smoked in the NCAA quarterfinals. That was not lost on Albany. That was not lost on the Great Danes. So to come out and win this game and win it in the fashion that they did, Maryland 12-game win streak coming into this game, dating back to last year, to lose after having a 4-goal lead in the fourth quarter at home, that stings for Be the Best. But I'm sure they're going to learn a lot of lessons from it.
Yeah, great win for the Dane train. They stay undefeated. Moving on to the Hopkins-Syracuse game, Blue Jays haven't had a lot of luck in the Dome over the last decade.
Yeah.
And they blew out Syracuse 18-7. I think it was 7-2 at halftime. Expecting a big Syracuse run to start the third. It never came. Blue Jays dominated shots 46-25 and ground balls 38-22. Usually the two of the stats that you look at as being in control of the game.
It was a completely dominant performance by Johns Hopkins. Yeah, 11 years, I think, had been the last time Hopkins had won in the Dome. I spent some time talking with Carmen Cavallo last week.
Carmen.
Carmen was saying, when's the last time you felt like going to the Dome was desperation instead of just going up there to have fun and play lacrosse and get a win? And, you know, he had a point. And I think Hopkins played with a ton of urgency. You know, I think that, you know, this was a close game early on. It was a little, you know, it was tight. Second quarter, and Hopkins just turned the kerosene on and really didn't allow Syracuse to get back in that game. I mean, as a player, as a broadcaster, when you play in the Dome, you can just it's like a big thunderstorm is coming, and you can see it over the horizon, you can feel it, you can smell it, you can sense it, and that just never took form on Saturday. Two things stick out. One, Cole Williams, 4 goals. He's developing into a beast for Hopkins. When he gets to his spot, he is so tough to defend. I like the fact that he scored a goal right-handed as well, showing a little bit of multi-dimensional talents. And how about Joel Tinney, 4 assists. A week into being challenged by Dave Petromalo to get more guys involved, stop trying to be the guy all yourself. I think Tinney has 8 assists in his last 2 games, something like that. I'd have to look that up and double check it, but he had 4 assists against Syracuse, which is huge. So big, big, big win for Johns Hopkins.
Another key game featuring top 10 teams. Denver goes to South Bend, and the Irish get an 11-9 win over the Pioneers.
And this was a series that has been defined by one goal in overtime games. But if you think back to the NCAA quarterfinals last year, Denver just ran Notre Dame off the field. I mean, they just blitzed them. And you don't see that every day. So, you know, you've got Denver coming into the game, a really nice win over North Carolina, 10-6. Notre Dame's coming in after losing 12-10 to Hopkins. I'm sorry, to Maryland, where Connor Kelly dropped 10 points on that vaunted defense. But you walked away from that Notre Dame game, and Matt and I talked about it last week. You know, if they could get better face-off play and if they could get better goaltending, the Irish can play with anybody in the country. Also, Brendan Gleeson and Brian Costabile were double donuts against Maryland. If they produce, the Irish can be a really, really good team. Well, guess what? They only won 9 of 24 face-offs, but that's better than they did against Maryland, believe it or not. And when you look at the score sheet, Brendan Gleeson had 4 goals and Costabile had 3. They showed up in a huge, huge way. And a week after Ryder Garnsey, where his playing time was limited and he scored 4 goals, he didn't do anything against Denver in this contest. So a huge win at home. Notre Dame built a huge lead. They were up 8-3 at halftime. Then they had to withstand a rally, which Denver's going to be able to do. You know, much like T.D. Erland controlled the faceoffs for Albany, you had Baptiste winning the battle in the second half. He wasn't as dominant as Erland. He went 3 out of 5 in the fourth quarter, but he still put in a great effort. And Denver just they can shoot the hell out of the ball. I mean, they just, man, it's like BBs coming at you. But this is a really, really nice win for Notre Dame, you know, coming off of that big loss to Maryland.
Let's talk about a couple of other notable games. In the Patriot League, Lehigh gets a 9-7 win over Army. My guy from my alma mater, Tower Hill, Andrew Pettit, 5 goals to lead the Mountain Hawks in that one.
Big win for Lehigh, and you got to feel good. Kevin Cassis is a guy that I've spent some time with professionally working studio at ESPN, and then you know, I've gotten to know him personally. And Lehigh's a team that's a little under the radar right now, 5-1 after that win. They got a huge game. We're recording this on Tuesday. Later today, they play Rutgers. So that's a really, really big game. You know, and Army's a team that I was high on them in the preseason, but now they've lost 2 games. You know, they lost to Syracuse by a goal up in the Dome, and now they lose a conference game. So everybody was like, well, Loyola's the class of the Patriot, but Army is right on their heels. I think you have to kind of think Lehigh is that team. And Lehigh has a player, Craig Chick, that I've been talking about for years, and I can't believe he wasn't an All-American last year, but he's the best defenseman you have never heard of in the college game.
Speaking of that Rutgers team, Princeton gets a much-needed 15-14 win in overtime against Rutgers on Saturday, and Michael Sowers, just a ho-hum 3 goals, 6 assists game to lead the Tigers.
Yeah, and they got waxed by Hopkins, so great bounce-back win at home. This is a Rutgers team that is scuffling all of a sudden, especially defensively, an area that was supposed to be a real strength with the return of Max Edelman in the goal and All-American and All-Big Ten selection, Michael Rexrode anchoring a veteran defense. All of a sudden, you know, Rutgers is having a ton of trouble keeping other offenses at bay. So they got to really clean some things up. If you're Princeton, you feel great about this. They enter Ivy League play this weekend. I think they take on Penn, a game that'll be on ESPNU. So, you know, this is it's a huge win for Princeton. And Rutgers, you know, as we mentioned, they play Lehigh today, Tuesday, and then they get Syracuse at home on Sunday. So a rivalry that's being renewed after a few-year hiatus. They haven't played since 2013. So that'll be a lot of fun. But Rutgers just needs to clean things up on the defensive end of the field.
The most shocking result of the weekend, for me at least, as a Hopkins fan, the Syracuse-Hopkins score differential was shocking. But Robert Morris, 12, Marquette, 2, in Milwaukee. That score is surprising to me.
Yeah, Marquette hit a high watermark in the season with an overtime victory against Ohio State, but then they turn around and they lose a game to, I think it was Bellarmine, on the Sunday of that Midwestern Lacrosse Classic. And for Bobby Moe to go in and beat a team built on defense.
Whip them.
They whooped them. They whooped them good. So, you know, I've been telling you, that guy Robert Morris, watch out for him. He's tough. But, no, this is a team that now is in the top 20 of the Maverick Inside Lacrosse media poll and well-deserved, showing that their win over Penn State was no fluke. So, you know, Robert Morris is for real. Northeast Conference, right? For yeah, Bobby Moe. I think so. So that's where Bryant has been the kingpin. But, you know, Robert Morris could, you know, look, if they can carry over this out of conference play into their in conference stuff, they could be the team going to the NCAA tournament. So hats off to the Colonials.
One last game with some notable result. Towson goes to Ohio State, gets a 7-6 overtime win. Good win for Towson, especially with Duke and Denver coming up before their CAA slate. Ohio State, man, they got a couple of tough games coming up, Denver and Notre Dame before their Big Ten season.
Well, look, overall, it was just a down weekend for the Big Ten. Maryland loses, Penn State lost to Cornell. Then you have Rutgers losing to Princeton. And then Ohio State gets beat at home by Towson. The Tigers just keep clawing and scratching. Ohio State offensively just needs to figure some things out. They've been living danger. You know, they lost. They should have lost a Jacksonville game. They won in overtime. Then they lose to Marquette. They get a nice one goal win against Detroit Mercy that same weekend at Midwest Lacrosse. But you know, this is an Ohio State team still trying to really find a solid identity on the offensive end of the field. I'll get Towson Duke this Saturday on LAC Sports Network at noon. That's a really interesting game. Can Towson's defense in any way, shape, or form slow down the Blue Devils?
You're talking about slowing down. You know what'll help pick you up? Mm-hmm. Trimino. Before, during, or after a workout.
I agree. You'll get no argument from me. But the inside lacrosse refrigerator is once again void of Trimino.
It's a demand thing. People love this stuff.
I love it. It's great. I could use one right now.
I'll tell you what is most amazing. Remember like protein powders, protein shakes?
The Shackley. The Shackley. Joe Weider. Yeah. Joe Weider muscle builder.
Bill Starr, whatever was in his coffee mug that he'd carry around.
The coach would say, whatever you do, do not drink out of Bill Starr's thermos.
But do you remember how crappy everything? The fact that Trimino tastes so good.
The bug? Did you ever have the bug at Hopkins?
The bug juice?
Yeah.
It
was great.
But the protein stuff. It was like a chocolate protein thing. It would be chalky and you just didn't want to eat a peanut butter. It wouldn't taste right.
You didn't get one at the Terrace Room dining hall? Didn't have a good protein shake for D-Fly?
I didn't know.
So he could punt an extra 3 yards and make his net average 28 yards a punt versus 25?
Really feeling my legs feels great today. It was that extra protein that I got from the Woolman Hall dining hall. No, but that's the thing that gets me about the Trimino is how good it was.
But it's very good.
It's protein-infused water. Yeah. Has 7 grams of whey protein and essential B vitamins to fuel your game. No sugars, no carbs, and only 28 calories. Trimino is ideal before, during, or after your workout. And as we've mentioned, it tastes great. It comes in 7 delicious flavors, including 3 new flavors, citrus, orchard, and raspberry limeade. You can grab one at CVS or get a case on Amazon.com. Trimino increases energy and endurance and even curbs your appetite. Play hard, not hungry. Protein has never tasted so good. All right, Dix. Even though we had a number one, number two matchup, not a whole lot of shakeup in the top half of the Maverick media poll this week, but the bottom half of the top 10, a lot of movers and shakers.
It took a lot of time on Sunday to put that together.
I bet it did. What was the most tricky part for you?
You like try to weigh. Robert Morris came into my top 20. I'm trying to think who else.
Vermont?
Vermont was already there. Vermont was like, you know, the 2019-ish. Also, like, how much value do you put on that Hopkins win over Syracuse? I think Hopkins jumped from like 19 to 11.
17 to 10.
In my poll, from like 19 to 11. You know, it's all about what have you done for me lately, but you also can't forget, you know, they were dominated by Loyola and they lost the Carolina game.
And what's somewhat unique to lacrosse is that a lot of the best teams play each other earlier in the season.
That's true.
So, you know, Penn loses to Villanova, but they beat Duke and then Duke beat Denver. And
osmosis.
Yeah, so there's a lot of that stuff that makes filling out the bracket trickier when, you know, in basketball there's 351 Division I schools that can't all play each other, obviously. But here's the top 10 of the Maverick media poll this week, and then you tell me where you think these guys land. So Hopkins, 3-2 now. They were 17th. They move up to number 10.
I believe I had them 11th in my poll. As I, of course, as I told you, I forgot my daggone paper today, so I don't know what I can't remember.
Blue Jays have two games this week. They play UMBC tonight, mm-hmm. which is Tuesday night. Again, this will drop on Wednesday. But, Dixie, you're on the call with Hall of Famer Don Zimmerman.
Can't wait to work with Coach Zim. This is a game that was originally scheduled to be at UMBC, but with the opening of the new arena on the campus of UMBC, there's an event going on tonight, and their administration felt like it was too much going on, so they moved the game to Hopkins. It's not on television, but it will be on Hop TV, which is the web stream sports service for Johns Hopkins. So Don Zimmerman and I will have the call.
I know you can't really talk about this game, but I expect the Blue Jays to get the job done. So when you're listening to this on Wednesday morning or Wednesday afternoon, I expect the Blue Jays to be 4-2 with a win over UMBC.
And if they're not, and if it doesn't go according to script, dial in the number that we will provide later and just rip Dan Flynn.
That number is 443-595-7020. And then Saturday, they host Delaware in a game that I'm going to be excited to watch that one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, number 9, Virginia. They're 6-1. They were 8 last week. They play at Notre Dame this week. It's a pretty big game. We'll get to that later. 8 is Loyola. They slide back one. Yale, who was number 10, moves up to number 7.
Mm-hmm.
The Bulldogs are 4-1 now. Villanova is 6-1. They hold down the 6th position. Denver is at number 5. Notre Dame at number 4. Duke at number 3. Maryland stays at number 2 despite a close loss to Albany, and the Great Danes on the Dane Train fame are 5-0 and hold down the number 1 spot again this week.
Yeah, so my top 10, Albany was number 2 last week. Maryland was number 1. They just flipped, and Maryland sits at number 2. I've got Duke at 3, Notre Dame 4, Denver 5. That sounds right, actually. I might have Yale in front of Villanova, like Yale 6, Villanova, which doesn't make sense because Yale lost to the Wildcats, but I've come to think of it, I think I may have had Villanova ahead of Yale. Yeah, that I don't really have a problem with that top 10 at all. I'm trying to think, because I had Hopkins 11, like who was in my top 10? I'm trying to remember, but I can't, so we'll just move on. It doesn't really matter. I mean, it's March, you know, it's the middle of March in a poll. So.
Again, there's maybe 1 or 2 weeks before most teams, depending on how big your conference is, get into like full-fledged conference play. So there are still some big games this week we'll get to in our 5 to watch later. All right. Mention our listener call-in line, Dix, which is 443-595-7020.
We have a caller this week.
20. We do have a caller this week, and it's Andy, who is a Cornell fan, and he wants to know about well, we'll listen to the call, and then we'll get to it.
Okay.
Hello, this is Andrew Baines Bernard. My friends call me the Nard Dog, and I am calling today from beautiful Ithaca, New York, on the campus of Cornell University. I'm a Cornell alum, class of 95. I wasn't much of an athlete, sang in the a cappella group Here Comes Treble with one of my best buddies, Broccoli Rob, but I am a huge Big Red lacrosse fan. I wanted to talk to you guys today about Jeff T. Is this kid the real deal? Huge win last week over Penn State. Can he lead Cornell to an Ivy League championship? What do you think? Where do you think the Big Red finished the end of the season? Thanks, guys. Love the podcast. Keep up the good work.
All right, so Andy from Ithaca, a Cornell grad, class of 95.
I thought he might be calling from Scranton, Pennsylvania.
Scranton, PA.
That was good.
Yeah, that was good. Wants to know about the Cornell Big Red and Jeff Teat, their star sophomore attackman. Cornell coming off a 9-7 win in the Tambroni Bowl over Penn State.
Yeah.
What do you think of their chances in the Ivy League this year?
Well, the first part of the question, is Jeff Teat the real deal? And yeah, he is the real deal. A guy who was rated by Inside the Cross, I believe, is the number one recruit in his class.
He was, yeah.
Number one freshman a year ago.
Dominated the U19 games.
Yes. And
in the summer of 2016.
So think about now, he just recorded his 100th point as a member of the Cornell Big Red lacrosse program.
Is that good to do in 5 games in your sophomore year?
Well, he's the second fastest player in the history of Cornell lacrosse. The first is Mike French. So Mike French is pretty – and French didn't play as a freshman because freshmen weren't allowed to play. So, I mean, you think about what French did was even, you know, so impressive for him. So Teat is the real deal. The question for Cornell is, do they have enough supplemental scoring around him to support him? And I think they do. I think they do. You look at their schedule, wins over Hobart. They smacked Binghamton, and then they just beat Penn State. Losses to Albany and Colgate.
No shame there.
Well, the Albany game, they actually could have and should have won. That was a game where, you know, you talk about the Dane train. Albany didn't play particularly well that game, and they had to come from behind to win it. And that was where Erland was able to win faceoff, similar to the fashion that he won against the University of Maryland. So they lose that game 11-9. But look, they also have a really good goaltender. Christian Knight is saving 63% of his shots. So Albany game aside, you know, Knight has been terrific, and he was even good in that game. I mean, he was sensational. That's why Albany was trailing going into the fourth quarter, was because of the work of Knight. So, you know, when you look at Cornell, they start Ivy League play this weekend. Are they for real? Well, you know what? We'll find out pretty quick because they play Yale on Saturday at Schoolcraft Field. And then they still have out-of-conference games against Syracuse, against Lehigh. So, you know, two teams that if you can get wins against them and they falter in their conference, good feathers to have in your cap when it comes to a potential at-large berth. But Cornell's a good team, and I think Peter Milliman has them playing good lacrosse. And if they can just string together a couple of wins consistently – 3-2 out of conference, not bad. And Jeff Teed is always worth the price of admission. So Cornell's got as good a chance as anybody as in the Ivies. I think Yale's still the favorite, but look, they can make a statement pretty quick by knocking off the Bulldogs this weekend.
Yeah, the Ivy League's gonna be a lot of fun to watch. I think Princeton, Cornell, and Penn are right on the heels, and don't leave Brown out of that either. So it's gonna be a fun race to watch.
Brown's the only team that has beaten Villanova this year.
That's true.
So,
all right, let's talk about sideline swap. You got two boys.
My older son Matt just asked to create an account on sideline swap, and he said he has a bunch of
heads and shafts
that he'd like to part with to make some money. So I said, go right ahead.
Sideline swap is where lacrosse players buy and sell their gear. You can shop for heads, helmets, shafts, gloves, and more, up to 70% off, or snag hard-to-find college gear of your favorite teams. I'm still looking for that Joel Tinney Culver throwback.
You have not found it successfully?
I have not found it yet.
I'm still looking for the Dan Flynn punting boot from 1993. I have not had
You will
much
not find
success.
That. I'm telling you, it is lost. And all purchases are backed by Sideline Swap's buyer guarantee. Head to sidelineswap.com. That's SIDELINESWAP.com. SidelineSwap.com, or download the iPhone app today. Dix, let's move on to some outstanding games that featured this weekend. Get your predictions on some of them. Number 12, Vermont. The Catamounts up to number 12 in the Maverick Media Poll. Travel to number 1, Albany, for a really big America East game.
Huge. And who would have thought that, as we're recording this podcast, there's only 3 undefeated teams in Division I lacrosse, and 2 of them are from the America East in the form of Albany and Vermont.
Not this guy.
Not that guy. Not the guy that just returned from the cruise.
No.
So, really, really big game. Albany riding high, feeling good about themselves. They get the Catamounts at home. I just cut a preview for ILTV or Instagram, whatever social media we're going to put it on. And, you know, Ian McKay is the leader of Vermont. But you have some other scorers in there. Ben French, Rob Hudson's really good. But this Vermont defense is very good, very talented. Think statistically they're top 5 in the country. But how are they going to contend with Erland? How are they going to contend with the firepower of Albany? So it would be interesting to see.
I got a point for you. Albany has had some big games. They're 5-0. They've played at Maryland. They've played in the Dome. 2 good wins. Probably looking forward all offseason long for that game. Circling those on the schedule, on the calendar, going to the Dome, going to College Park to play the defending champs. Vermont, though, this is probably the game they've been looking forward to all offseason, all preseason, going to Albany to play the Great Danes. They're going to be
sky high.
Sky high.
They're going to be ready to roll. And
Vermont's going to be sky high.
You would know. Yeah, it should be a great game. And you can catch that. I believe it's streaming on the America East Network.
Number 2, Maryland. At number 6, Villanova. Villanova's a team that's had Maryland's number. And this should be another outstanding game.
Yeah, this one's being televised as well on Fox Sports 1, I believe. which is, you know, they have the Fox has a contract with the Big East.
Wow.
So I do believe this game will be televised, which is great for lacrosse fans. Yeah, two things going in this one and another preview that I did for our Zach Babbo, our multimedia manager. When you talk about Maryland, double whammy for Villanova in this one. One, they're coming off the loss to Albany, so they're going to be stinging from that. And then two, the Wildcats beat the Terps last year in College Park. So kind of double motivation for Maryland. I like this this Villanova team, though. I really, really do. I think they're talented. I think they play fast. They've got a backup goaltender that's been having some success for them. Christian Cuccinello is a handful. So this should be a really, really good game and a stiff test for Maryland. I mean, look at Maryland's schedule. What, last weekend, Albany. Then they play Villanova this weekend. Then they go to California to play against the University of North Carolina. So this is kind of a gauntlet of great games for Maryland, and Villanova is going to be ready for them.
Let's talk about the game you're going to be covering for LAC Sportsnet this Saturday.
Yeah.
Number 3 Duke travels to number 20 Towson for a game in the U.
Johnny United Stadium?
Call it the U.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I started that.
Good for you.
I used to be the director of marketing at Towson, and I started
is that why
it
I looked
U.
At, is that why you call it one thing, and I look at you with just puzzle and like bewilderment?
The U.
Good job.
They call it that.
It's my thing, man.
So have you talked to the coaches? Yeah, have you prepared for this game?
Not yet. So I got the Hopkins UMBC game tonight. Then I've got a women's game tomorrow at Penn State.
So on Wednesday night.
Yeah, Penn State Drexel.
Refereeing a game on Friday, you said.
Yeah, but then I can give my full undivided attention to Towson Duke starting Wednesday night.
What type of game do you think this is going to be? High scoring, low scoring?
You know, if Towson has anything to do with it, it'll be in the single digits. It'll be close. It'll be shot clocks, a lot of shot clocks administered by the referees. You know, I think Duke has a disadvantage at the faceoff, but I think they'll get enough stops to where they can get the game in their favor tempo-wise. They want to play a little bit more up-tempo. You know, obviously they won't get to get Gutterding involved, but you got guys like Brad Smith and Peter Conley and you know, they can make plays. I think Duke's, you know, how does Towson handle Duke's athleticism? You know, this is just a really, really athletic team, big, strong, fast. And they got little guys, too, that can run around you. The question in this game, I think, will be tempo. You know, who can establish the tempo, who can play at the pace that they want to play.
Another top 20 game featuring two teams coming off losses.
Another one?
A win. Yeah, number 13 Syracuse at number 18 Rutgers on Sunday.
First time that these two teams have played since 2013, so it's great to see them. I think we talked earlier about Rutgers struggling defensively. Syracuse, no strangers to adversity. They got smoked by Albany by 12 goals in the Carrier Dome back in February, and then came out and got a couple wins. You know, Army by a goal, and then Virginia in overtime. So how will they respond? They'll be ready to play. You know, Rutgers, we talked about, you know, cleaning things up on the defensive end, but, you know, Jules Henningberg, Casey Rose is a terrific midfielder. This is a great opportunity for Rutgers to get a quality win against an out-of-conference opponent.
And the last game in our five to watch this week, number 4, Notre Dame, at number 9, Virginia, in a top 10 matchup in the ACC.
Yeah, and you know, Virginia looking for a win. I think they're 1-24,
oh, yeah.
1-25 in the ACC over the last handful of years. So is this the game that they can break through and get a win? You know, we've seen Virginia narrow win against Manhattan last week, and then they escape Stony Brook with a one-goal victory. This is a team that desperately misses Ryan Conrad, who went out with an injury in the Syracuse game, and then we found out that he is done for the rest of the year.
I didn't know that.
Where have you been?
Been
really?
Out of the country.
Where have you been? You said you had Wi-Fi at some point during the cruise.
For like three hours.
Yeah, Conrad's done.
Oh, that's terrible.
Breaking news.
That's heartbreaking.
Breaking news. Ryan Conrad done for the year. So Virginia, obviously, they want to play fast. They want to get up and down the field. They have the ability to do that. But this is a Notre Dame team that's really good. And I think we've seen it, you know, the close loss to Maryland where they barely won any faceoffs and didn't get good goaltending. And then they were able to mitigate that against Denver and get a huge win. So it was a really, really good game. I believe this one's on ESPNU on St. Patrick's Day. So that'll be a really fun game.
So, Dix, you just mentioned St. Patrick's Day.
Mm-hmm.
And that is our give and go for the week. That's our topic of the give and go for this week. Now, you're Irish, right?
No.
You're not?
No.
Oh.
I'm not. Sorry.
Then you're green
with
envy.
I am English, German, Italian, predominantly German.
So you just missed being Irish.
Basically.
You're just about everything else.
No, look, I can't help my ancestry. What do you want me to do, a 23andMe? Like
maybe.
The ancestry kit to see if there's any
You're
Irish?
You're just like a short little happy-go-lucky guy who sort of has some leprechaunish features.
Wow, that wasn't completely discriminatory right there. Thank you. Hashtag me too.
Yes, you have been persecuted based on your... Yeah, that's great.
Based on my appearance, do I look like I'm ready to go after your lucky charms? Is that what you're saying?
They're magically delicious. Maybe you are. So anyway...
How about if I get one of those big, big Irish wooden sticks and crack it upside your head? How about that?
That would be awesome.
See if you like that.
Here's our give and go this week. Again, this is how it works. I come up with the topic. Dix is great on his feet. I sort of introduce it, say what...
I never know what the give and go is until I sit down with this stuff.
And then you get to give your chance on your take on it. So what are the three favorite things about St. Patrick's Day? All right? And any stories that you might have. Or just your favorite things. Right. So I'll just list a few of them. One, I like it that even though you are not Irish, mm-hmm. and that is my heritage, everybody seems to celebrate St. Patrick's Day.
Of course.
And it's fun, and everybody has a good time. And there's not a lot of... You know, there's some people who... celebrate Christmas as a Christian, but don't like it. They don't like all the putting up the tree, all the work that goes into it, the buying of the presents, the stress over it. Mm-hmm. Everybody loves St. Patrick's Day. I think that's a huge thing. One, the idea that you just do things that are green. Mm-hmm. Green's an underrated color. But like green beer.
Yeah.
Green eggs and ham. Oh, on this cruise, it's like the Carnival Cruise Line has like a Dr. Seuss themed. So they have a green eggs and ham breakfast. Where they bring the characters in and they make green. My kids both eat green eggs and ham.
That's great.
Impressed.
Was it really a Dr. Seuss thing, or did they screw up and actually have green eggs and say, you know what, we need to come up with this theme?
They had green eggs and ham.
Have these jabronis eat our food?
No, it was very well done. They
so it's it, always like, it's a risky run. And all I love all inclusive, but man, you never know what you're getting with all inclusive.
That's true. And then one of my other favorite things is the food: corned beef and cabbage,
delicious.
The boiled potatoes and the carrots and like. Really don't do that often. It's kind of like the Thanksgiving or Christmas. You only do like
you never eat.
You only
corned
do
beef.
Like a turkey.
Nobody ever eats cabbage
once or twice a year. Yeah. But St. Patrick's Day, get the corned beef and cabbage. Mm-hmm. It's so good.
Okay,
it's so delicious. And I'm looking forward to making a big pot of that probably Saturday or Sunday.
Okay.
So what do
can
you
can I have
about?
Some? You're gonna bring me some
if you want it. I'll probably have plenty of extra.
Will you?
Yeah,
bring me some please. In. I'd love to next week.
I've learned over the years like how to, you know, because I always used to just get it or my mom would make it.
Right.
Or it was just around. So I had to learn how to make it myself. I've gotten pretty good at it.
Good for you. Yeah. Look at you.
So what are your favorite aspects of this jovial, fun holiday?
Yeah, I can't dispute any of the things that you brought up. I think maybe the biggest thing for me might be the fact that it's in the middle of the NCAA basketball tournament. So you always kind of associate St. Patrick's Day with the NCAA tournament. And typically by that Saturday or Sunday, my bracket is completely screwed. So, you know, I can look forward to that. I don't like parades, but I like looking at pictures of parades, especially if friends went, things of that. So I have a certain group of friends, different families that go to the St. Patrick's Day parade, which was last weekend in Baltimore. So it's always fun looking at their pictures on Facebook and other things.
How did you grow up in Catonsville and you don't love parades?
I love the
4th of July parade is like one of the best around Baltimore.
No, look, I do enjoy the 4th of July parade. You associate, so when you're younger, and then when my kids were younger, you associate the 4th of July parade with in Catonsville with the candy, like all the Kiwanis Club and different groups throwing out candy. You also have the step groups from some of the city high schools, the dance teams that come up. And it is like 125 degrees at the Catonsville 4th of July parade. And these girls and guys are in full band uniform and full cheerleading uniform, batons. And they are, man, it has got to be
right
warm.
Right down Frederick Road.
Right down Frederick Road, yeah, baby. Yeah, man. So, I don't know. I mean, I like that parade. I just don't really get into parades all that much. Like, that's what I grew up on, though. Like, that's a parade that I've been going to forever.
Got to put your chair out there on July 2nd. Oh,
July 2nd? Man, it's more like June 2nd. It's crazy. And people put ropes up and all that other kind of thing. And, yeah, it's a little out of hand with the chairs at the Catonsville 4th of July parade. Other things, I think that's pretty, you know, I always associated St. Patrick's Day also with Hopkins Syracuse.
Yeah, me too.
As a player,
yeah,
it would always be St. Patrick's weekend, whether we hosted them at our place or if we would go up to the Dome. And there was always a good party that when we hosted them, you know, after at Homewood. That was always a good weekend. But it's not on St. Patrick's Day anymore.
Yeah.
St. Patrick's Day weekend because Syracuse, they... Now that the NCAA women's tournament, now that their NCAA women's team, the basketball team is good, they always seem to host, and that's why the game was moved from the Dome back to Homewood last year. So both schools just completely moved the weekend. It's a weekend earlier this year. But St. Patrick's Day always used to mean Hopkins, Syracuse, lacrosse.
Quick St. Patrick's Day story for you.
Go ahead.
Do you remember that place that was on York Road near Northern Parkway? It was called AL Gators or Gators Pub or something when we were in college.
The Loyola Bar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right in Belvedere Square.
Yeah. Yeah. So across
AL Gators was down in Pasadena. So, you got the AL Gators on Thursday night. You know, you get a two for one purple shooters or something like that. AL Gators was out of hand. Smallwood Road. I think it was.
So one year, went over there for St. Patrick's Day, and they had, you know, I was in college. We were broke. And they had, for $3.17, you could get a plate of corned beef, cabbage, and food. And they had 17-cent draft beers.
Oh, wow.
The little, you probably like the 12-ounce little cups, 10-ounce little cups. Yeah, but here's the best part. Standing there, and we're there early because we're trying to get something to eat. It's probably like 7 or 8 o'clock, something like that. And I looked down on like the dance floor, there's a $20 bill.
Whoa.
It wasn't mine.
Right.
But like there was no one around me.
Was now.
Yeah. So I put my foot over it to like hold it down. And I'm looking around like, if anyone comes over, I'll give it back to him. But right. I'm like, I start doing the math in my head, how many 17-cent draft beers that would get me, $20. It was like one of the best nights ever. Because I was like, who wants a beer?
And right.
You get like a tray of
yeah
as many beers as you
can. Was it
carry,
green? Was the beer green?
No, I don't think so.
No.
I think
your
it was.
Stomach was green, though,
yeah,
a couple
next
hours
day,
later.
That was some low-budget beer, for sure. But that was a memory of St. Patrick's Day that I just...
That's incredible.
Such a good night. Such that's a great night in college.
I remember, did you ever go down to Schaefer's? Down on, I think it was on Charles?
Yeah.
Charles, it was down, sure I was there once. It was down near the harbor, but Schaefer's used to have that 25-cent draft night. That used to get out of hand.
I remember like coming downtown like a couple times and felt like it was,
oh my
like
god,
in
downtown
world.
Was like, yeah, you're like, oh, we're going to Fells.
We're getting in a cab,
yeah,
or someone's driving. Like, what? We can't walk there.
Yeah,
like you don't want to walk there.
No, no. And quite honestly, you didn't want to drive home with anybody either, because it was always an adventure. But I just remember Schaefer's had that huge staircase that led up to the bar. And after a long night of 25-cent drafts, it was an adventure getting down that stair or watching people get down that staircase at the end of the night. That was something else.
All right. If you like what you heard, please subscribe, leave a rating on iTunes or whatever platform you listen on, and share it with a friend. By God, share it with a friend. You can reach out to us on Twitter, @DixonLacrosse or @D_fly, or reach us via email at dflynn@insidelacrosse.com. And of course, if you have a good rant, a comment, or a question, give us a shout at 443-595-7020. Also, don't forget to check out our other podcasts here at Inside Lacrosse. We drop a new one every weekday during the season. Have a great week and enjoy the games.
Nobody cares about St. Patrick's Day.